just exploded that one into straightaway center field. And you knew as soon as he started hitting the right that that stroke would come back to him. And all Marquise Grissom could do was look up. That was a line drive rocket. He's tied Big Mac. Wow. What a bomb.
So many bombs in 1998. 720 WGN. Mark Harmon, Joe Brand, Chip Carey. His first season in the booth, along for an incredible ride. Hey Chip, this is memory lane time for you, right? We got the
doc. Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. What was? I don't know when you're hearing your calls now. Or you're on a million different radio shows. Thank you so much for taking time tonight. Like, what's it like for you? Does it just bring a smile to your face thinking about that season?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think about how much younger I was and how much less gray hair I had, and you know, and hearing Steve Stone in the background, and you know, my broadcast partner and dear friend. It was such a wonderful time in my life, personally and professionally. Despite the fact that I didn't get to work with my grandfather, but the city of Chicago was so great to me, and the Cubs were so great to me, and to parachute into a season where you had a good Cubs team and a team that went to the playoffs. Man, it was a dream come true. It was a lot of fun. And I think the big special tomorrow night will be, as you said, a great trip down memory lane for a lot of people, including me.
Just a reminder, Chip, you were hired to do the middle innings that year. Is that right?
Yeah, I was hired to do the middle three, pre and post at home and all the road games. Harry was not going to travel quite so much. And they offered me the job a couple of years earlier to work on radio, and for myriad reasons, I couldn't take it. But, you know, I was excited to work with my grandfather personally and professionally. I didn't know much about Harry. We were sort of estranged, I guess is the best way to put it. So a chance for our family to close some circles and close some loops and all that stuff. That didn't happen, obviously. And to go from being an understudy to the guy that had to sit in that chair with his partner, his fans, his microphone, his producer and stuff was you know, an awesome and difficult responsibility. But a lot of people were in my corner. A lot of people helped me. And obviously a good team made the transition as easy and as smooth as it possibly could be.
Chip, I know you had done baseball prior to that, but were you ever able to really absorb just how important the season was? And I'm not even just talking about the home run chase, but everything you just mentioned and the fact that the home run chase is part of it. And, oh, yeah, the Cubs are going to the playoffs. Like, all these things are just accumulating in the same year. Did it ever come to realization for you in that moment?
No. Because, you know, you live in the moment. You don't really think and you don't really process it in that way until time has gone on and you have a chance to think back and reflect and see where that season was in your personal history and for the city of Chicago and all that kind of stuff. Look, like I said, I came to Chicago hoping to be an apprentice and learn at the foot of the master and work with Steve and Harry and understand what Chicago was all about. I didn't get that opportunity. I was thrust into that. And I think did a pretty good job of being myself and finding my own voice in the midst of a very good season. And as time went on, as time goes by, 22 years later, I've said to many people many times that 1998 was in many ways my favorite Major League Baseball season in the sense that I was able to follow my grandfather, forge a great relationship with Steve Stone, you know, mesh with people in Chicago and people who understood that I was not Harry Carey, and follow a team that had so many remarkable individual and team performances in a way that touched a lot of hearts there. Because, look, we know the Cubs' history wasn't particularly good as far as postseason baseball and success. And to be a very, very minor part and chronicle that team's success in 98, which was so unexpected, and to be in the right place at the right time was a great entree for me in Chicago and was really, a springboard for my career, not just as a Cubs announcer, but as a baseball announcer and as a professional. And I'm always grateful for the people who are extremely supportive of me, and I'll never forget those great moments.
What kind of pressure did that put on you? I mean, your grandfather was known for his gigantic calls, and there was a heck of a lot of them that year.
Yeah, I think some of that is self-imposed. I think I was very honest with my partner and my crew and the people that hired me. I was going to do things based upon who I was. I share Harry's name. I'm Harry Christopher Carey III, but I wasn't Harry. I was a young father, and I was not from Chicago. I didn't know the Cubs history and all that stuff. Harry was in the Hall of Fame. I was just beginning my career, and so I just said, look, I've got to do this my way. And that was the only advice that my dad and my grandfather ever gave me was, it is a personality-driven business. You have to be you. And I think that was very, very strong advice and smart advice, because if I tried to be a cheap facsimile of Harry Carey, people would have seen right through it. So was I perfect? Nah. And were there people in Chicago that hated me because they hated Harry? Yeah. And were there people that loved me because of Harry? Yeah. And were there people that I think came to appreciate and understand and accept the fact that I was who I was because that was me? Yeah, absolutely. And that's all part of the growing process that we all go through as announcers and as human beings. You know, you do the best that you can in the moment and let the chips fall where they may, if you will. And I'm very, very happy with my track record in Chicago. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity that so many people gave and the opportunities of trust that they gave me as well.
Chip Carey with us here on 720 WGN. Currently the voice of your Atlanta, or not your, but of the Atlanta Braves.
We're trying to change that. They could be America's team, too. It's okay.
There we go. Let me try to at least say that somewhat correctly, and maybe we do have some Braves fans listening right now. Chip, did you have conversations with Stoney and or anybody else around the time in 98 thinking, this doesn't quite seem right? What's going on behind the scenes here? Or were you just kind of along for the ride? Like, I was one of my first years covering the team. And, you know, when Sammy said Flintstone Vitamins, I believed him. And I would interview McGuire or be at his locker and you'd see Andrew Steen die on, and I thought that was normal. Like, I really didn't have in my mind that what was coming 5-6 years later when it blew up on baseball.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to remember that some of the stuff that people talked about was legal at the time. So that's number one. Number two, Andrew, I couldn't spell it or tell you what it did. So that didn't mean anything to me. For me personally, there was some naivete as far as being a young broadcaster, getting used to Major League lifestyle and all that Major League Baseball had. There was a romantic notion of what I thought was going on. As far as PEDs and stuff, I don't remember specific conversations about that. I do remember us talking very specifically about, okay, you know, 3 years earlier we had expansion and the, you know, pitching was not nearly as deep and as developed as we were used to, and that might have explained some of what was going on. But as far as PEDs and you know, guys cheating and all that kind of stuff, no, we never really got into that because at the moment, the joy of watching what Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa and Ken Griffey Jr. in the other league were doing was so special, so unique, so unprecedented that we got caught up in the moment. At least I did. And to this day, I don't have any ill will. I don't have any bitterness at all about what we know now, because as a 32-year-old broadcaster watching these things happen in real time, it was such an exciting ride. It was so needed for baseball, for our country, and all that stuff that it was, a front row seat to a Rolling Stones concert every single night. And I loved every minute of it.
Chip, have you seen the documentary?
I've not. I'll see it tomorrow night. I've not gotten an advanced copy.
Because, it sounds like for the people who have seen it, the feedback is that steroids aren't mentioned a lot, or at least not until the very end. Do you think that the audience might be deprived of something if that's the case, or do you?
No, because I think that horse has been whipped to death. I think people know what they know or know what they think they know. And I think the most difficult thing for baseball and the people that are electing guys or excluding guys from the Hall of Fame is very simple, and that is we don't know who was taking and who wasn't. And that's the most difficult part of the proposition. I firmly believe that the people who watch baseball and love baseball are smart enough to come to their own conclusions and do their own research. And it makes no sense to me that guys like Roger Clemens and Rafael Palmeiro and Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa are not in the Hall of Fame, irrespective of what we think they did. If they were great players at the time in which they played, that's my benchmark for the Hall of Fame. And I would have no problem as well with having a line on their plaque saying played in the era known as the steroid era. Let people make their own decisions. Let people do their own homework and let people come to their own conclusions as to what was right and what was wrong. There were a lot of people that did these things legally and illegally that we don't know. There are a lot of people that played it that we do know. And it seems to me sort of silly that that the Hall of Fame is excluding guys including guys who may have bent the rules and broken the rules because they were the greatest players that they played in the era in which they played, and a lot of guys were doing stuff that we don't know. That's just my opinion on it.
It seems the momentum is going that way. I mean, I don't have a vote, and nobody really cares what I think for the record here, but I was on this train of absolutely not, they cheated, and now I'm starting to sway the other way. Hey, Chip, right. what was Sammy like for you personally? What was your relationship with him? And you know, I'm maybe not just '98, but going through the whole time you were in Chicago.
He was fine with me. My judgment on guys is not so much how they deal with me, but how they deal with my family. We have professional relationships with players, and sometimes we would say stuff that would rankle guys, and sometimes we'd say stuff that made them really happy. I get that. That's just the nature of the business. But every time my wife or my kids would come to Chicago, Sammy Sosa was the first guy to say hello, shake my hand, say hi to my daughter, say hi to my twin son, say hello to my wife. He was first class all the way. We did have our occasional disagreements, but we always talked them out. He was a pro's pro. He got it. And I think that's the great secret of Sammy Sosa, is for all of his great accomplishments between the white lines, Sammy was very, very street smart. He knew how to co-opt the media in a good way. And this is not a negative thing at all, but he looked at the camera. He kissed the camera. Chicago was starved for a baseball guy that could be the sports Michael Jordan, if you will. And for a couple of summers, Sammy Sosa was that guy, and he got it. He understood that we could help him, and he in turn could help us, and it was a great symbiotic relationship. And again, I have nothing but good things to say about Sammy and his relationship with me. He treated me first class, and I tried to do the same with him.
Chip, I've been pre-gaming for this documentary tomorrow. I'm just so juiced up about it. I watched this YouTube documentary last night from 1998 about the home run chase, and it was just totally glorifying both of them. But I kept seeing you, obviously, with the Cubs calls. Did you do a couple of Fox games, too, some national games during that?
I might have. God, that's 22 years and about 9 million synapses burned away since then, but probably so.
Yeah.
At the time in 98, I was still doing Orlando Magic basketball, and I was doing Fox weekend studio work and the Cubs. So I was cross country doing all kinds of stuff at the time. So I may have done some FS1 games or stuff in the interim, yes.
Well, basically what I'm getting at is, obviously you're there for Sosa's 66 home runs. Mark McGwire hit 7 home runs out of his 70 against the Cubs that year. And, oh, by the way, you might be doing some National Cardinal games as well. I feel like you had the best seat for that Cubs-Cardinals regular season series. And I don't know. I mean, are we ever going to see a regular season series like the Cubs and Cardinals from 1998?
Well, I don't know about that. I just think that, with all the East Coast bias of the Yankees and Red Sox and all that stuff, I still say that the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry is the best in all of sports. It is such great theater. I grew up in St. Louis and then worked for the Cubs, so I understand it from both sides. To be in St. Louis when McGwire broke the record was incredibly humbling and awesome. Jack Buck was a guy that I grew up listening to in St. Louis, was my broadcasting idol, and to watch him standing and crying, tears running down his face in his red Cardinal jacket when McGwire made his trip around the bases and all the fireworks and all that went on with that was surreal in a lot of different ways and on a lot of different levels for me. It was just so great to be, as you said, on the front row of history in St. Louis at Old Busch Stadium. I'm sorry that Sammy didn't break the record first. It would have been great from a Cubs perspective, but to be able to see that from a historical perspective and watch it happen in real time, it was great for baseball. It was great for the two franchises. It was great for the fans who wanted to believe in all that was right with our great sport. And quite frankly, in today's current climate, I think we could all use a lot more of that, to be honest with you.
What do you remember about Brant Brown in the drop ball in Milwaukee. I forgot who told the story, but somebody, maybe it was Riggleman, who talked about Sano in the manager's office after the game with his head down, and the manager, Jim, who's first class guy, saying, Ronnie, it's going to be okay.
I think Pat Hughes was, Riggleman was consoling Sano.
It was Pat who said that, yes.
Yeah, see, it was hard for me because on TV I blew the call. It was one of my worst calls ever because I follow the ball drops, and I forgot how many runners were on. So, Steve Stone had to say, no, the Brewers have won the game. On radio, Sano screams, oh, no, oh, no. And the great thing about Ronnie was, we called him the coach because he lived and died with everything that happened on the field. And Steve and I used to say, Ronnie, you can't get this wound up with what's going on because you can't control it. You're going to kill yourself. If Mark Reyes goes over four, you'd be able to go out and have a drink and enjoy the night and say, hey, we'll go get him tomorrow. But that was the great thing about Ronnie, and we all loved to tease him, and I think he loved it too. He said to me one time, as much as Steve and I used to bug him and give him crap, he said, you guys are keeping me alive. You're mean, but you're keeping me alive, which was, I think, a great compliment for him. I love him and miss him dearly, as so many Cubs fans do, but when the Cubs would win, Ron Santo thought the Cubs were never going to lose another game. But if the Cubs lost, they were never going to win another game. And that was the day-to-day roller coaster that he had to live with. And so as far as the Brant Brown game was concerned, we all got on the plane and were thinking, oh, my God, what's going to happen? This team's either going to come together or they're going to fall apart. And luckily, they came together and continued to play good baseball and figured out a way to force game 163. And obviously, they won that and went to the playoffs. So, as the old saying goes, all's well that ended well, and it sure ended well for the Cubs that year in regular season play.
Yeah, Chip, thanks so much for being with us tonight. Ending this interview, let's just get your thought. Do you think we're going to have baseball this year?
Oh, we're going to have baseball. The commissioner has the right to impose a season of his will and duration. As a fan of the game, and I have to take my Braves and Fox Sports South hat off, as a fan of the game, I'm absolutely disgusted with the way that this has been handled, the leaks and all that kind of stuff. This is not what should be happening in the midst of a pandemic. I'd like to think the players and owners were better than this, and I hope that they will be. But yes, we're going to have baseball, whether it's 50 games or 70 games, I don't know. But to talk about economics in a time where 40 million people are unemployed and 110,000 people have died from coronavirus is just gross and underlines the big divisions that we have in our sport. We've got to figure out a way to be partners and not adversaries. And as a fan of the sport and someone whose family has broadcast 75 years of Major League Baseball, it's incredibly disappointing, and I know the fans are, and I hope that baseball's players and owners will sit back and reflect on what are we doing for the fans? And right now the answer to that is nothing, and that's got to change real quick in my opinion.
Really well said, Chip. Thanks so much, and we're looking forward to watching tomorrow night. Yeah,
Chip, thank you.
See you soon. All the best. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Chip Carey, voice of your Atlanta Braves, and of course the former voice of your Chicago Cubs with us here on 720 WGN. Quick time out. Let's talk about what he just said about the fans coming on back here, 720 WGN.